It's going to be a tense and nervous 90 minutes. Well, we've had a false start. Now we are underway in Stuttgart. It's the Socceroos in the green and gold, kicking from right to left on your screen in this first half.
He's crazy like a fool. He's Harry Kewell.
Hello and welcome to the Football Sack Podcast, and what a great morning of A-League news we've got for you this morning. Obviously, you can hear that intro, which means that Harry Kewell has signed for the Melbourne Victory. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk VPL, had the semi-final of VPL. We'll go into some A-League news, talk EPL and La Liga. So all that and more coming up on the Football Sack Podcast, the Sack on Sunday podcast.
And it wouldn't be a Football Sack Podcast if we did not actually play that theme. It gets to me every time. My name is Supernova Pete Novakovsky. Across from me is Michael Roshek. And in the vacant seat next to you, normally Matt G would be sitting there. Today, he isn't. I would like to say we'll shed a tear.
But instead, the crowd just goes wild.
Yay! And of course, my name is Michael Roshek, and we're going to be speaking to Scott Condon, who's our Melbourne-based football sacker. And we're going to be starting to talk, obviously, the big news out of Melbourne is Harry Kewell signing. So, how are you there, Scott?
Good morning, guys. Lovely to be an A-League fan on a day like today, and even better to be a Melbourneite.
Yeah, I can imagine. Obviously, we're broadcasting this podcast, or at least recording this podcast, from the home of Western Sydney football, where Harry Kewell hails from, just about 15 minutes down the road, and he signed for the Melbourne Victory. What on earth is going on, Scotty Condon?
Not sure. It's massive down here. The news spread like wildfire yesterday. It would have been great for him to be in Sydney in his same town, but being a Melbourne boy myself, it's fantastic for him to be here.
Yeah, look, it is a great signing. Harry Kewell he has been touted by club president Di Pietro of Melbourne Victory as the biggest signing in the history of Australian sport.
And I guess I had to think about this yesterday after I heard him say that, and I thought, well, he's probably right. Maybe Robbie Fowler and Dwight Yorke come close, but in terms of their stature in the game. But just in the way Australian football is, Harry Kewell's probably the biggest name behind Tim Cahill, maybe, but that's arguable.
Yeah, look, Timmy's form in recent years has been exceptional, but I think Harry Kewell's history in the English Premier League really has him on the lips of most sports fans in the country. And, you know, it is a signing that really is bigger than any code itself, and I really think that there are metres to be gained in this one.
Yeah, its saga's been longer than the Star Wars saga, so it's great to finally have it over and done with.
Yeah, look, it is. I mean, it was a very long and drawn out and protracted negotiation. I think we have to cast our minds as well to the Cesc Fabregas saga, which was really 3 years in the offing, and this has really taken about 3 months for it to become signed, sealed, and delivered. And it really, 7 weeks out from the A-Leagues, the buzz is there, and the first game that Melbourne plays is against, you guessed it, Sydney FC on October 8 at Etihad Stadium. That is going to be a bottler, isn't it, Scotty?
It's going to be great. The Etihad Stadium holds 52,000. I think it holds the record, top three maybe, for the attendance records, and this will be right up there.
Well, one of my favourite Facebook groups at the moment is Melbourne Victory may have Harry Kewell, but Sydney FC have Jamie Coyne. So I guess...
How'd you like them apples?
Yeah. Suck on that. look, it will be a fantastic competition with Harry Kewell playing for Melbourne Victory. I guess, where do you think he would fit in? Do you think he's going to be more of a centre-forward alongside Archie Thompson, Danny Allsopp and Giancarlo Solorzano? Or do you think he's going to be more of a midfielder there with Carlos Hernandez? Where do you see him playing his football?
I'm not too sure, though. I did see Mehmet Jurakovic say he'll play just behind the strikers yesterday at the press conference. But I think he's also promised that spot to Marcus Rojas, Hernandez, Solorzano, and any other new signing we get. So maybe they're looking at playing a 3-5-2 at the moment with the lack of defenders the Victory have got.
Just changed the formation. Look, Liverpool at the moment are playing one goalkeeper and 10 midfielders. So who knows, Melbourne Victory could follow soon.
Probably so, yeah. They're attacking. The depth in their attacking at the moment is the best in the A-League by a fair bit, I'd say.
Yeah, it's frightening, isn't it? You've probably got five guys who could play number 10. And I'd like to see that. I think it'd be a great promotion for the Melbourne Victory if you had five blokes standing in number 10 jersey. But look, it's going to be a very tight season, and it's going to probably be the best season we've ever had. Without a doubt, we've got two clubs who aren't Melbourne Victory who are doing exceptionally well as teams. We have Central Coast and Brisbane Roar who really are going to push for the honours again. But I think once Melbourne Victory get their, you know, a sniff of ascendancy, they're really hard to get the initiative back from, aren't they?
They are, and they'll be very hard to beat, especially at Amy Stadium if Harry Kewell's playing and the stadium's packed. It'll be very hard to beat down here, which would give them probably 10, 13 wins for the season.
So looking at the moment of signing Harry Kewell, 3:15, it's going to be a memorable time for Victory supporters. Where were you at that point?
Standing on the banks of the Green Gully at my job as Football Sacker reporter for the VPL.
Great segue, Scotty. Great
yeah,
segue.
Well done there.
I was at the Green Gully versus Hume City match.
Of course, that was a semi-final of the Victorian Premier League. And what happened in that game?
The major semi-final. So the winner goes straight through. Green Gully finished on top. So they were hosting Hume City, who finished third, who had won last week. Green Gully won 3-0.
Wow, that's a pretty solid result, isn't it?
It was a solid result. I haven't been to many games where I think a team that has won 3-0 wasn't the better side. Green Gully were clinical. They did what they had to do. Hume attacked. Hume have got the best two players, in my opinion, in the competition, in Richie Cardozo, who is A-League bound, surely, and Andy Vlahos, who did spend a season or two at the Victory, but he's ageing. He's 34, 35 now. So Hume have limped into the finals. They won last week, but had lost the four games beforehand. But Green Gully finished on top, and they're straight in the grand final and win with a shot to defend their title from last year.
Now, the other major match which is taking place actually this afternoon or this evening is Oakley Cannons versus South Melbourne. That's at Jack Edwards Reserve. Where do you think this match is going? Do you think it's set in stone, or because the two teams are so closely matched, how do you think it's going to go?
I have no idea who's going to win this one. It's any team, and the team that wins today could go on and win the next two and win the grand final. It's that close in the VPL. It's that unpredictable.
Yeah, exactly right. So who's your tip, do you think? Who would you put your money on?
For today or for the title?
For the title.
It's hard to go past Green Gully. They've sort of done a Stephen Bradbury. They were fourth going into the last round, and teams fell over above them. They finished on top. They did a similar thing last year where they came good at the right time and ended up winning the title. So I'm sticking with Green Gully, but that's not to say that any of the other three teams aren't in with a shot at all.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, thank you very much, Scotty, for being on the Football Sack podcast today. We'll leave it there and we'll have you on very soon in the future.
No worries. Thanks for having me, guys.
Cheers. Thanks, Scotty. And that was Scotty Condon, who is our resident Victorian Football Sack journo, and he's been doing some excellent work for us from there, and we're very happy to have him on the show any time. We're going to move on now to some A-League news, and another big signing or transfer was that of Matt Mackay, Pete.
Yes, it was. Something which a lot of people somewhat knew, that Rangers were very interested in Matt Mackay, and it didn't really take long. As soon as they said that they wanted him, they just picked him up straight away. He got his work permit yesterday approved, and he played his last game against Brisbane Strikers, whereby Brisbane Roar managed to get that 5-0 win. It's probably the best move for Matty Mackay at the moment. He is moving into more of a Socceroo-type player, and it's a move forward for him without a doubt.
Absolutely. We've talked about the pressure he's going to face week in, week out, playing for Rangers. If he is indeed in that sort of engine room position, the playmaker position that he was at Brisbane Roar, there's going to be a lot of pressure on him, a lot of media scrutiny, and it's going to be only good for his development as a Socceroo going into the Asian Cup.
Yeah, most definitely, and he's going to be one of the major players for the Asian Cup campaign. He's almost made that centre midfield, even as a reserve left back role, his own. There's not much competition for him there. Probably the next closest player would be Mile Yedinak, who is rumoured to be on the way to the English Premier League from a Turkish club.
He went to Crystal Palace, I believe, because yes. Tony Popovich is there with his background as assistant manager. So, look, Milo Jednak, definitely. Carl Valeri's another one, but he's more of a holding guy, whereas Matt McKay likes to get forward and to start a few of the forays. Speaking of forays, another excellent segue in the podcast. Brisbane Roar have wasted absolutely no time in signing two players to really plug the gaps that their big summer transfers away have been in, obviously, Matt McKay and Kostas Barbarouses. They've signed Saeed Mohammed Adnan, who's a player who's a Bahraini international, and we've seen a lot of in recent times with our qualification for the World Cup and the Asian Cup. We've played Bahrain both times.
So, in other words, I hope that the people who run the stretcher on the sidelines are nice and fit.
Yep.
Because they will probably be running around a fair bit this season.
That's right. We don't want to cast too many aspersions on him, but he may be a diver.
Possibly.
Yeah. He's 28 years old. He's been capped 79 times, scored 13 goals, and we can't forget he's a player of quality. 2009 runner-up Asian Player of the Year. So, good pedigree.
Most definitely.
And the second big signing for Brisbane Roar is that of a striker, and he's a current Albanian international. He's 26 years old. His name is Besart Berisha, and it's a great story. We had Rado Vidicic looking at his son playing in the Bundesliga, or at least in the Bundesliga 2 with Hertha Berlin. And in that trip, he noticed this Berisha character from Albania playing for Armenia Bielefeld. And he scouted him. And Ange Postecoglou has wasted absolutely no time in signing a player who's really at the height of his powers at 26.
Brilliant. Well, you can only get better, especially with the striker. You can basically just improve at the age of 26. Mm. And with confidence, the more goals he scores, I guess it's just a matter of when he starts scoring those goals now.
Mm.
Because if he gets one in the first round, he's set for the season. If it's going to take him four or five rounds to go, it could stuff him up for the season.
And that's exactly what can happen to imports in the A-League. They come in, the world is expected of them, and if they don't perform absolutely 100% straight off the bat, like Sergio Aguero for Man City, scoring a brace in 25 minutes off the bench, a lot of people are like, well, why isn't there an Australian striker who's getting paid the same money, who, you know, isn't having his spot taken up by an import? But look, let's look forward to the Roar. They had a very impressive 5-1 hit out against Wellington Phoenix in front of 15,000 people.
That is phenomenal.
At a pre-season game. And the Wellington Phoenix have been in the media this week saying that they want to be bigger and better than the Hurricanes in the Super 14. And certainly for a pre-season fixture getting 15,000, despite the fact that they lost 5-1 to Brisbane Roar, the champions, what a great advertisement for the A-League.
Most definitely. And you just have to make sure that these 15,000 people are going to come back to the round one of the A-League now, because you think of how many people turned up for that game. A fantastic advertisement, and that was in Dunedin, wasn't it? So that was away from the regular home. Mm. That was basically an away fixture. It's like when they play in Christchurch, they always end up getting more supporters at Christchurch than they would at a regular home game.
It's great. I mean, it's brilliant. And I think, you know, the interest in football is palpable in New Zealand. We saw them at the World Cup. It was an absolute revelation. We've seen Wellington Phoenix Mail make the finals. They've got some great players in Paul Eiffel and others. And I think part of that crowd is also the hype around Brisbane Roar. They haven't lost a game for about 15 years. You know? And when they go on the road, I think you're going to see big crowds.
Yeah, sounds good.
Another fixture we had during the week, a pre-season fixture, was Sydney FC. They played Parramatta FC at Parramatta Stadium. And you were there, weren't you, Pete?
Yes, I was. And that ended in a 6-0 demolition.
Drubbing.
Yeah.
Dusting.
It was
An absolute dust up.
Yeah.
How many other words with D can I come up with? Yeah. That's devastating.
Get the thesaurus out, mate. It'll be fine. Look, it was at halftime, it was 1-0 in favour of Sydney FC. Angelo Petrados, that's Demi Petrados' father, just loosely grabbed hold of Juho Mikaela in the box. Juho just looked around and went, it's a penalty.
Juho went, yeehaw.
Yeah.
Wow.
That was really bad. And the referee awarded the penalty. Nicky Carl slotted at home. He ended up getting a hat-trick in that game. We also had Celeb Rufa, who was having a trial with Sydney FC, and a couple of other standout players, including Haji Giligor from the New South Wales Institute of Sport. I think he's a 15-year-old kid. Absolutely outstanding talent. He is so physical on the ball. He moves in all the right spots. He's fantastic off the ball. Look, if he isn't signed up, there is something seriously wrong with Sydney FC's youth team. So I already know I sent the text messages to the youth league coaches saying, sign him up, you know you want to.
Pete's the scout to the stars and he's a contracts administrator. And no, look, there's been no shortage of talent coming through the ranks at Sydney FC. The problem has been them getting time in the big time.
Exactly, it's game time.
Lavichka needs to be a bit more or a bit less cautious. I think he needs to shuffle his deck a little bit more and really start to feed these players through like Holger Ozic has done and really follow that lead.
Yeah, well, I guess what will help is the mentoring system. Look at Carol Kissel, how amazing he is in the centre of midfield for Sydney FC. I guess if you let someone like Haji look up to him and work with him, and they could be interchangeable for, say, around about like the last 10 minutes of every game, whatever, they swap. I guess it would only be fantastic for their development.
Yes,
you look at someone like Brendan Gaughan, who, when he signed with Sydney FC, I think it was 3 or 4 years ago, and he was meant to be the next big thing. Nothing really happened. He didn't get game time. And now he's playing with Bonnyrigg. No disrespect to Bonnyrigg.
No, of course not. Yeah.
Terry Antonis is the next one. He is meant to be playing with Everton. He's too young, so he's playing with Sydney FC at the moment, basically. And he's looking up to Nicky Carr. As long as he gets the game time this season, he's going to be absolutely brilliant.
There's been a few youngsters that haven't been given a fair go. Coffey Danning had a few choice words on his way out to Brisbane Roar to say about the system. Ryan Grant's been one who has been given a little bit of time and probably more in the Carol Kissel mould. Be a great mentor for him as well. But, you know, we really want to see these young kids being given a chance. We've had players like Ian Ramsey, Fly the Coop, Chris Payne. The list just goes on and on and on. So, look, Sydney, there was an article during the week on the World Game about Lavichka saying he didn't want the horror of last season again. He was looking to make some changes. And, look, coming off the back of a 6-0 drubbing of a side that hasn't done wonders in the New South Wales Premier League this season. We hope that it's a sign of good things to come, and we hope that Dirk Melton can really get the engine room firing behind the scenes as well.
Yeah, well, Sydney FC are still looking for 2 more players, so if you are interested, send your resume to info@thefootballsack.com and we will make sure it gets sent across to them.
Exactly. Well, Pete sends text messages to youth coaches regularly, so if you do that, there's half a chance you might get on to the Sydney FC bench, but not get game time unless you're 26.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe I'll put my own name forward. I'm like, yeah,
definitely should. Yeah, this Pete Novakovsky guy. He's rad. Awesome. He's rad. He can play anywhere. He can play anywhere.
Sounds good.
He can play rush goalie.
Sure, why not? Let's do it. Bring it on.
All right. Well, we're going to go to a little break now, and we'll come back and we'll talk English Premier League and La Liga. Stay with us.
For the latest news, opinion, match reports, and for more on the A-League, head to our website at thefootballsack.com.
And a little bit of news that we didn't mention before we had that awesome sting was that Marco Bresciano and Lucas Neal, one former Socceroo, because he's no longer making himself available for selection, and the current Socceroos captain, have both signed in the Middle East. Marco Bresciano for Al Nassr and Al Jazeera for Lucas Neal.
Yeah, it's very interesting moves for both players. A lot of people are just saying it's for money.
Yes, pretty sure that's what it's for.
Yeah,
that's Lucas Neal would have to be the biggest taker of cash in the game, the Australian game.
Yeah.
Let's call it that. I mean, Luke Wilkshire gets more money in Moscow, but this Lucas Neal signing, he's not much of a believer in coming home to the A-League, I think we can gather from this signing.
Not really, that's for sure. Well, we look at how he did at West Ham, for instance. He went for West Ham to apparently help them save relegation, and he pocketed a fair few million for that. That's what he's going to do at his new club. He's going there to pocket a fair few million.
Yeah. He's got some deep pockets, I think, as well. I think he needs to fill them right up, and he definitely will be at Al Jazeera. So, look, we look forward to it. I think, you know, we've seen from other Aussies that have gone over there that they generally don't last very long. And we had John McCain, who was there for a year, I think, and then came home and has signed up for an A-League club. So, look, hopefully that's the way it goes. You know, I think the lifestyle is pretty hard to go, like, you know, deal with. It's quite different to what an Aussie is used to. Although Lucas has been in Istanbul, which is quite a secular Islamic country. So,
okay, I'm just thinking out loud here. With the money that Marco Bresciano and Lucas Neal earn, why don't they combine their funds and open up an A-League club?
Absolutely.
Done.
Why not?
They can fund it.
Yep.
They can pay all the players. They can run it. They can do whatever the hell they want. They can organise their own coaches. Do it.
Mm.
Go, get on there.
Look, if I, what I suppose what I would say to that is if I had several $1 million up my sleeve, investing it in other places would probably be on top of my list. Even though I'm a bit of a purist, it is like chucking a whole lot of money into a black hole. We saw this week that Con Constantine, Parkley Markets has gone into receivership, and that's basically the end of Con. He's no longer running the Jets. That Tinkler took over that. And poor old Con's come on hard times. And look, he's one of the game's stalwarts. He's been around it for a long time, and he's poured a lot of money into football. And it's a shame to see him go, but sometimes that's the way football investment goes. I mean, you look at it in England, and it's not a sound investment. They just lose money constantly and pour money into big signings. And it's more the prestige and the other business opportunities that it opens up. But yeah, I'd like to see them put back into the game in Australia, and I think Lucas Neal definitely needs to. And a few of the other old Socceroos that are still running around probably need to do the same when they do come home.
Yeah. Well, one player who isn't coming home, Mark Schwarzer.
Yep.
We mentioned it last week.
We did.
He's not coming home.
Mm.
Not now.
No.
Not ever.
No. And look, I think what one of Schwarzer's greatest attributes is his character and his personality, and I think he's got legs in administration of the game. I'd like to see him come home and run the FFA. I think he'd be a great figurehead. We'll have to see whether that happens. But, you know, let's hope that some of these Socceroos do contribute, even if they don't come back as players. It'd be nice to see them coaching teams and certainly build upon the success that has really built up the A-League in Australian coaching with Ange Postecoglou and Graham Arnold stepping up. So we're going to move on now to a bit of English Premier League news, and a lot has been happening, hasn't it, Pete? We've had the opening weekend, and
yes,
there were some big results there. Obviously, we had Man City just destroying Swansea 4-1, or 4-0.
Yeah.
4-0.
4-0.
Absolutely pummeled.
And Kun Aguero, standout player, his first game in a City jersey, and scored 2, set up 1.
In 25 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's crackerjack football.
Yeah.
That's explosive, and his goal, his second goal from distance, that's got to be up there for goal of the season already.
Well, his assist, the ball's almost the way out, and he just chips it up over the top, passes it through.
And even his first goal, when he scored that, it was a tap-in. But the way he celebrated, he was very much gung-ho about starting off on the right foot. And boy, did Man City start off on the right foot. Another club that started off on the right foot, at least for the first 45 minutes, was your club, Liverpool.
Yes.
They were so exceptional in that first 45 minutes. Charlie Adams, Stuart Downing, and Luis Suarez absolutely running the show.
Yeah, and I'm not surprised at that, to be honest. It's King Kenny. It's his influence.
Yeah.
That's the difference. Yeah. Last season, you looked, when we had Roy Hodgson, he was shocking.
Yeah.
He played shitty football.
Yeah, he's a
mid-table coach.
He's a very good mid-table coach.
Yes.
He's a tinkerer. He's a bit like Harry Redknapp used to be about 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And Harry Redknapp's really stepped up at Tottenham. I think, look, King Kenny, what he does is believe in English players. And he's brought in a lot of English players. And
yes,
the English players really come to the fore. And it's about time some of these English clubs actually played English players.
Yeah.
If you look at the Spanish league, it's 80% Spanish. You look at
the German league,
75% Italian. And the German league, it's completely Deutsch, although a lot of them are passport holders from Poland, but they play in the national team, and that's what the Premier League needs to do, doesn't it? It really needs to bring through some of these English players. So in that game, Liverpool against Sunderland, it was 1-1, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. I guess disappointing to see a draw in the opening day, but Liverpool backed it up against Arsenal this weekend when they got the 2-0 result.
A superb win. Superb 2-0 win. Away at the Emirates too. And I mean, Arsenal
first
are
time in 11 years.
Wow. Yeah. Big stat that. Big stat.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And I think Arsenal are a club really that aren't going to be in the top 6 this year. I think we can say that with comfort. I mean, Cesc is away, is gone. Sami Nasri is want away, and Jack Wilshere has an injury that's seemingly not going to end anytime soon.
Now, you saying Cesc gone, do you mean him going to Barcelona, or him gone as in Marcelo's tackle, that scissor tackle behind his legs?
I mean, that was a ball-busting tackle from behind.
It was
just X-rated. It was right in front of the two dugouts, and it was in Barcelona. You couldn't get a more villainous act than what Marcelo did.
And Jose Mourinho's poke in the eye of
that
the,
could be more villain. That could be more villainous. And it was actually a poke in the eye against Villanova, who is the coach, the assistant manager of Barcelona. So it was a very spiteful encounter. It was a result that was 5-4 on aggregate, and we had a 2-2 draw at the Nou Camp. Sorry, at the was it the new Camp, wasn't it?
Bernabeu.
No, well, yes, no, the Bernabeu, because the return leg was at the new Camp. Killing it, Rochek. Absolutely killing it. We had goals, three goals across the games to Lionel Messi, just a standout player. The tie was opened up with David Villa with an absolute ball-busting shot from distance. Iker Casillas, not the world's worst goalkeeper, left him about a quarter of a centimetre in the top corner, and David Villa was equal to it and absolutely hit it. So a great start to what is a marquee fixture in world football. But, of course, that tackle really overshadowed the entire Spanish Super Cup. You had Messi just put the icing on the cake in the 88th minute, and I think Dani Alves with a big tackle just before the ball spilled to Fabregas, and Fabregas took it, shielded it towards the sideline where the two dugouts were, and Marcelo had just had enough. The left leg hit him low and the right leg scissored and hit him high. And, you know, Fabregas was lucky not to break his leg, wasn't he?
He was very, very lucky. Go out, buy yourself a lottery ticket, mate.
Yeah, I mean, Fabregas, it was really a welcome back to Spanish football moment. And, yeah, it's really going to make Spanish football a very exciting proposition this season, outside of what it already is, which is the most skillful and beautiful league in the world. So we're going to have to leave it there for the Sack on Sunday podcast. Thank you very much for listening, Supernova Pete. You have always been there and always been good on the deck. So thank you for having
me. No worries. I'm always there, unlike Matt.
Snap. Yep. The less said about that, the better. No, he's just taking some time off. He's been a very busy boy being an actor during the week. So maybe hear a bit about that next week on the show. My name is Michael Rochek, and that has been The Sack on Sunday. Goodbye.
That was the Football Sack Podcast. If you haven't already, subscribe on iTunes to stay up to date with all of the football action across Australia.